Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, June 28th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run. But do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg's should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. A few folks are having a little problems getting in the chat room, so we hope that slowly but surely they'll be able to click on the right buttons, and Blog Talk Radio will cooperate, and the chat room will slowly but surely fill up today because we have a great show. Thursdays is one of my favorite days of the week, especially today. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backhome Magazine, joins us twice a month talking all about homesteading and living more sustainable. And today is no exception. I will let you know that today's topic is gardening for seasoned citizens. Yep, how cool is that? Gardening for seasoned citizens. Over 50 techniques and setups that are body friendly. So I'm 43, but I'm definitely looking forward to that because we've been picking okra and squash and peas and beans and everything else, and so the lower back is taking its toll on the lower back, I should say. So I'm definitely going to be listening to this and maybe taking some notes as well. We encourage you to take notes on a regular basis. You can learn a lot by tuning in on Monday through Friday at noon. Just have that Chicken Whisperer spiral notebook handy. Put a big CW with a magic marker right across the front, and then take notes on a daily basis, and we will broaden your knowledge and my knowledge as well, and all about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable living. So I have some really, really fabulous, fabulous news. I'm very proud. I'm very touched, but I had no doubts. I mean, I truly, we've done this twice a year since the radio show started. Taking advantage, yes, of our reach with the radio show and Facebook and Twitter, taking advantage of our reach for a good cause. And this morning it was kind of towards the end. It was a little slow to go. You know, I know no budgets are tied. I know the economy kind of is in the toilet right now. We were asking, hey, if you could donate $2, $3, $5, $10, $20, $15, $50, whatever you could afford. Last night I posted, you know, maybe tomorrow you can do without that $5 specialty coffee. Maybe tomorrow you can take your lunch instead of go out to lunch, donate that money for your fancy coffee or donate that money for your lunch tomorrow to this great cause for Melody and her husband, Keith. Keith has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. It's a very sad situation. They have chickens. They love their chickens. I saw in the beginning where Melody was going to have to and had started selling off her flock, which she uses to make some money, selling hatching eggs, selling the chicks and things. She was willing and was planning on and had started selling her backyard flock to make some money so she could take Keith, her husband, on a dream trout fishing trip. And when I saw that, I said, you know, chickens are such an important part, you know as well as I, of your daily emotional routine. And already them going on this emotional roller coaster with him having cancer for some time and then now getting the updated diagnosis of stage 4 and going now through some serious, serious treatments, that alone is an emotional roller coaster. So, you know, we didn't want her to have to sell our chickens because she needs that time out there with her chickens to get her mind focused and have that peace. So I said, you know what, we can do this. We haven't had any type of benefit or fundraiser probably in at least a year. We normally do it about twice a year. So I thought, you know what, we need to go ahead and do this. And so I had contacted and found, not too far from where they live, they live in western Tennessee. I found in kind of eastern Arkansas, about 3 hours away from them, a beautiful trout fishing lodge right on a river with guides and the whole nine yards, on-site restaurant, cabins, rooms, everything. I contacted the owner of the facility, told him what we wanted to do. Our goal was to raise them $1,000. I told them, I said, look, we're going to raise money for them to go on this trip. We're not looking for a handout. But we, you know, anything you can do to help us, help them, would be absolutely tremendous. And right off the top, I'm going to be calling them this week, maybe even today, tell them we raised the money. And that's my big announcement. In less than a week, I think we started this last Thursday, so maybe 1 week. I think we started it last Thursday. Because we were going to have Bridget McRae on, and we did this big benefit launch instead. So in 7 days from right now, actually, 7 days from right now, we have raised one over $1,000. Our goal was set for $1,000. We feel that this can give them at least an all-expense-paid trip, gas, food, lodging, the donated guided tours every day that they're there, everything they're going to need for at least 5 days. I'm thinking 7 days it'll be done, because the place they're going to be staying is very affordable as far as the daily rate. I think it's like for their own private cabin on the river. I mean, fully furnished, a little kitchenette, I think. It's got the TV. I mean, it's not like a sleeping bag cabin on the Appalachian Trail. A nice cabin, $79 a night, I believe. So they should, they, you know, we're looking at, we think that they should be able to stay 7 days. Having lunch and dinner in the lodge, the whole nine yards, gas money there and back, everything. So thank you. All the Chicken Whisper fans out there deserve a huge, huge round of applause. Because this morning early, we actually raised our goal of $1,000.
Oh, yeah!
For Melody and Keith Myers. So congratulations, Chicken Whisper fans. We did it. I knew we could. I thought we could do it a little faster than a week, but I know times are tough. But in exactly 1 week, 7 days, we raised over $1,000 for this great cause. So from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. Melody and Keith, thank you. This is going to be a dream trip for them that he's always wanted to go on. It'll be some good quality time together for them. And one more important thing you can do that's not going to cost you anything. Let's send out our prayers for healing and peace of mind for this family. Regardless of what your beliefs, if you want to send prayers, great. Good vibes, great. Energy, great. Whatever it is, if you want to have a seance or you know, pray with stones or playing cards or whatever your beliefs are, good vibes, energy. Let's do this for this family. Let's do it for everybody that's going through tough times. But let's focus some prayers for Melody and Keith. These medications that they're giving this week and the treatments are going to work, and that we actually get this done. And so we really appreciate all your help. Everybody that donated, we appreciate it. You know, $2, $50, whatever you could donate, we appreciate it. And it's going to a great cause. I'm going to ask if they'll take lots of pictures on their trip and share them with us and all the folks that donated money and didn't. I understand times are tough, and every dollar counts. I mean, a loaf of bread at $3 right now, insane. So, and that can feed you for lunches for all week. So I understand that it's tough for everybody, but, you know, $2, $3, and you can still donate if you want. Visit our Facebook page and get them a little bit more money. I'm sure they'll need it for medication costs and hospital costs and things like that, put food on their table and whatnot. So if you can do that, we definitely would appreciate it. So just visit our Facebook page and scroll down to one of the links, and you can donate by PayPal, and we definitely appreciate it. So Deb the gardener on my Facebook page, when I had posted there about gardening for seasoned citizens, over 50 techniques and setups that are body friendly, as today's radio show topic, Deb the gardener said, "Seasoned citizens? Does this mean that someone has marinated us in buttermilk and then dipped us in spicy breading?" Oh, gotta love Chicken Whisper, folks. What a great sense of humor they've got. So that's the first awesome announcement. We raised our goal, $1,000 for Melody and Keith Myers. So thank you all much, so much for that. Let's see, another big announcement. Today is the last day for your chance to register to win that chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. Yep, tonight at 11:59 p.m. we will stop taking entries. Only one entry per household. You can look at all the rules on our Facebook page. But yep, tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the deadline for you to go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Okay, that's facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And then when the page pops up, you'll see right below our big, big, big page banner, our big picture of us broadcasting live. Underneath that, you'll see some smaller pictures. One of them states, Coop Contest. Just click on that button that says Coop Contest, and then that'll walk you through how to register to win. Your choice. You'll have a choice of one of three different chicken coops that they carry over at mypetchicken.com. Derek and Tracy, so gracious to do this for us. And they've got their chicken coops now. They've been boosted, if you will. They've been the Mac Daddy-ized, if you want to call it that. But they've been new and improved, all of them. All the models of their wooden new coops have been new and improved. They all have some increased strength in the hardware cloth that's on them for more protection. The wood is more substantial, they say. They've got some new models, one particularly called the Bungalow, which is really cool. But the winner will have their choice of three select chicken coops, and we will announce the winner tomorrow on this radio show. Tomorrow is Fun Friday. It'll be even a more funner Friday, because tomorrow during the radio show we will announce the winner of the awesome chicken coop, and we'll post it on Facebook in case you can't tune in. So tomorrow you have until tonight at 11:59 p.m. to go ahead and register to win and enter that chicken coop contest from mypetchicken.com. So that'll be tomorrow. We'll announce the winner here. So that's very, very cool. Let me tell you something else that's really neat. You know, we've got this huge garden going on. It's just under an acre, and it's just blowing our minds how much food's coming out of it. It's truly a blessing from God. And we were out there last night picking squash and okra, and I had a good bit of watering to do yesterday. I got it all done through the irrigation and me doing a little water with the hose where the irrigation doesn't hit. So we got, you know, like everybody else, you know, we're 101 today, 105, 106, 104, 102. Next 5 days are going to be just brutal. So I wanted to make sure I got some good irrigation going on. And I guess it was the day before yesterday. I've got this one young lady here in town. She's already bought three buckets of peas from me, two buckets of squash and whatnot. And she is famous, yes, locally famous, for her homemade, truly homemade crust, everything, meringue, everything, homemade chocolate pie. Ooh-wee! And I haven't had one in years. I think the last chocolate pie I had from her was when we first bought the house here about 5 years ago, because we weren't down here full-time. And I made the comment the other day. I said, I tell you what, I'll trade you a bucket of peas for one of your homemade wonderful chocolate pies. And the good and bad part about this is Jen can't eat chocolate. It's got some caffeine in it, and it doesn't do well with her caffeine. Makes her it's not good for her it just I don't even know exactly what it does, but she can't have a lot of caffeine. Caffeine's in chocolate. So I have this morning, Jen says, hey, there's a big red truck by our gate. So, you know, well, secure here, we are secure. Don't be infiltrating my perimeter. So anyway, so we got the gate key, went down to the driveway and opened the gate, and it was her husband. And Jen went down there and got this wonderful, beautiful homemade chocolate pie. And so I said, I'll trade you a pie for some peas. She says, No. I'm going to pay you for your peas and your produce, but I'll make you a pie. So goodness gracious, I got a beautiful homemade, everything homemade, crust, the chocolate pie, the meringue, everything. That's so good. And I actually had a piece before I came on the radio show. I had just gotten back. I wanted to take Caleb out of to the grocery store so Jen could have some morning time to herself to get some work done. Me and Caleb went to the grocery store. I came back. I was running a little late. There wasn't really time for lunch, but there it was. I opened up the fridge. Beautiful homemade chocolate pie with meringue. So I had a little piece of that before I came on air. Yeah, Vanessa says, no caffeine here. It makes me feel very sick. So that's kind of what it is with Jen. I'm not sure what it is. And also, she can't have anything, as much as we do all natural, she can't have tea tree oil. I think that's what it is. Can't have. She loves sweet tea, right? Southern girl, can't do the sweet tea. Even caffeine-free green tea. I would make, green tea. I would make sweet tea out of green tea. Oh, it was so good. And but green tea, even caffeine-free green tea has some caffeine in it. Caffeine-free anything has some caffeine. So, she'd drink a glass of tea, poet's wife, and it would affect her, I guarantee you, because when she kind of pinpointed this out and what, she's even been to the allergist for it, but it's not really an allergy. But anyway, So I've got a whole big chocolate pod that I'm going to have to, let's see, if I cut it into six slices, that's one slice a day for 6 days or two slices a day for 3 days. I've actually lost some weight lately with all the work I've been doing in my garden and watching kind of our diet, but I guess one, maybe two pieces of chocolate pie every day with the work in the garden is not going to be that bad. Come on. So it's fun. The garden's going like crazy. We've got to be out there every day. You know folks who grow squash and okra every single day. Oh, I got other good news, and then we're going to go over to the phone lines, and we're going to bring on Richard Frudenberger. But let me tell you this, too, because I promised you I would inform you on this. We had so many peas come in, and so I got online and started looking for pea shellers, you know? And they're so expensive. You can't even touch really a commercial sized pea sheller unless you're a billionaire. And then I didn't really look on how to build your own, but I know there's some out there. And then I saw kind of a smaller home style or home use pea sheller, and it was still about $300 as a tabletop model, and I didn't want to spend that. But I found one on Amazon, and I saw a YouTube of this guy using it, and it's called the Mr. Pea Sheller. Mr. Pea Sheller. It was like $35. Maybe with shipping it was $40, I guess. And I got it, I think I bought it at Amazon, so I got free shipping. But I think it was about $40 for, you know, so I think you can find them maybe $35 plus paying for shipping, but maybe it was about $40 at Amazon, but shipping was included. So it came yesterday, UPS, along with our Arm & Hammer Super Washing Soda, which we can't find anywhere down here, so we had to order it off Amazon too, because we make all of our own laundry detergent with Borax and Arm & Hammer Super Washing Soda and the Castile soap. But anyway, that came yesterday, so we got my laundry smells better now, folks. We're running out. But I got the Mr. Pea Sheller yesterday, and I tried it out, and it does come with a hand. It's about 5 inches square. Okay, I don't even think it's 6 inches square. If I had to guess, it's probably about 5 inches perfectly square, at most 6 inches square. And you got a little clamp, so you can clamp it to a table or something like that. And it does come with a hand crank if you choose to hand crank it. But when you're doing bushels of peas, you can hook it up to the drill, a power drill that has a long rod that you just slide up into the drill like you would any type of bit. Or you can connect it to your electric mixer. Just slide it up there where the mixing thing would go, and then it clamps down on it, and it'll turn it around and around and around. So we got that done, and it came in the mail yesterday, and I just kind of let you know, you probably, I didn't know what to expect, and there is a learning curve with everything, even the Mr. Pea Sheller, but I said, you know what, I kind of want to sit in the air conditioner if I'm going to be doing this for a while, so I set it up in the living room, and just a little tidbit of information, if you're going to use the Pea Sheller, you probably don't want to do it in the living room when there's carpet, but nonetheless, not a problem, vacuum cleaner solved the problem. But I will say this, my official review is that I think it's going to work out fine. There is that learning curve. I learned, and it tells you in the instructions this, the peas we picked, some of them were a little green and maybe not quite ready to pick, and you can forget it. They are not going to be pulled through this thing to actually shell. So it's kind of like, remember the old washing machine ringers that they got two ringers? And anyway, the two ringers are attached to little gears, and they spin, and you basically feed the peas into one end of this thing, and it grabs the pea and throws it through, and due to the pressure of going through those ringers, the pea shell flies out one end, and the peas just kind of come back towards you. So it works. I mean, it works really well. It states in the directions that you can actually shell about a bushel of peas, whether it be crowder peas, purple hull, black-eyed peas, whatever. You can do a whole bushel in about 30 minutes. And I'll probably tend to agree with that once you get in the groove and you got all your kind of peas laid out and they're not, you know, still stuck together where you have to separate them into two, you know, individual. So I feel you could probably do a bushel in 30 minutes. But the key is, I mean, the important key, it's kind of like making biscuits. The most important key there is not to overwork the dough. I learned that the hard way. But I think the key here with the Mr. Pea Sheller is that you have to wait to the last minute to harvest your peas. The hulls almost have to be that yellowish, that light tan to yellow color, almost really completely dried out, if you will, no moisture in it, for them to really, really get shelled easily. You throw them in there, bzz, 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 and it works absolutely fabulous for $40. I got a pea sheller, hook it to the drill,
And I think it's going to be great for, again, purple hulls, black eyed peas, crowders, things like that. But and I tried the butter beans in there, and I think I probably had the same problem. I picked some of the butter beans a little early, and so they get a lot of juicy juice in the holes there. And then there's that kind of that lining inside the butter bean. You know, if you open up a butter bean just with your hands, it opens up nice and clean. You can just get the peas out, no problem. But there's a lining in there, too. And I was throwing them butter beans through there, and it would actually the pressure, since I think they were still a little green, some of that lining inside would also come off and then get in the peas. So I think that it's going to be a great investment for $40, especially for black-eyed peas, purple hulls, crowder peas, things like that, any long type of pea. And I may try to run some more butter beans through there, just wait a little bit longer to pick them until they're a little bit not as juicy. So the Mr. Pea Sheller for $40 has come through, and that is my official review there. Is the key, just like with not working your dough too much, would be make sure when you pick your peas, they are ready to be picked. Don't pick the green ones unless you want to, you know, do it by hand, which you still can, not a problem. Put in a movie, you know, shell your peas. But for the Mr. Pea Sheller to work appropriately, you almost have to wait for those shells of those peas to be a good light tan or yellow, so they just run right through that pea sheller, no problem. But it works pretty well, and I think it was a good purchase. All righty, what we're going to do very, very quickly is just get a couple of commercials played here. We come back, we're going to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, one of my favorite shows of the month, when he comes on. And today's topic is gardening for seasoned citizens, over 50 techniques and setups that are body friendly. And after picking peas and okra and squash, my lower back's telling me, hey, you're 43 years old. So yeah, we'll go to a commercial break. We'll come back here very shortly, and we'll welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Stay with us, folks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to welcome Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Richard, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. I didn't see about what time you got on, but I'm very excited today. Last Thursday, we launched kind of a benefit fundraiser for a fellow chicken lover, Melody, and her husband, Keith. Her husband, Keith, has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and she wanted to take him on a dream trout fishing trip over to Arkansas. And today we met our goal of raising $1,000 through the radio show and our Facebook page and all of our Chicken Whisper fans, so I'm just on top of the world because of that. We do a fundraiser about twice a year, and was very excited that we hit our goal today. So we've got great news to celebrate with that. We're giving away a chicken coop tomorrow, and the Mr. P Sheller came. I'm sure you probably, from one of your magazines in the past, have probably plans to make your own P Sheller, I'm guessing.
I was listening to that, and I think we may have done a sort of a home tabletop model. But it was a cranking one, if I remember right. But
right.
So I heard all that stuff. But I know anything like that, like a plucker or the shellers or anything of that stuff is very expensive when you get into a commercial model. So there's a lot of room for do-it-yourself innovation in those areas.
Absolutely, without a doubt. So this one, I think, will probably meet our little homestead needs. So today's topic interests everybody, whether you're a seasoned citizen or not. I know you missed this, but I had posted it on Facebook, and Deb the Gardener on our Facebook page, when I had posted the topic, Gardening for Seasoned Citizens, over 50 techniques and setups that are bodily friendly, she had put a little joke. She said, seasoned citizens, does that mean that someone has been marinated in buttermilk and then dipped in spicy breading? not quite. But she knows what we're talking about, and we're ready to learn all these different techniques. Even if you're not 50, let me tell you, your back will take a toll if you got a garden. So I'm ready to hear all these tips as well.
Yeah, that's the first thing I was going to say is that I think I told you, over 50, just so you'd understand the whole picture, but it definitely does not need to be over 50. I mean, there's just convenience. It could be a long day and you really don't want to stoop labor isn't what you're looking forward to in the end of the day, or there may be other reasons why you might have hurt, you might have been doing some work and hurt, got a twitch in the back, or you just don't feel like stooping, there's a lot of things that come into this, and it's not just gardening as you get on in years, and a lot of this stuff also just applies. I mean, I was digging around looking for a couple of different techniques, and it goes really beyond techniques. There's tools involved. There's also building projects that or ways you can do your garden differently that really come into play here. So I guess gardening for convenience is probably the key word here. It's not just out of need. It's also out of convenience. I guess we can start off with just the garden plan. I mean, if you don't have a garden yet, if you haven't planned your garden yet, or if you've moved, or you have never gardened and you decide you maybe want to start a small garden, have a garden that you're about to redesign or whatever. You really may want to take a look at some of these techniques one by one, and then really take a good look at the big picture. A lot of the things we do, of course, are aimed at low cost economy or less expensive ways to do things, either by do it yourself or even if you had friends or a professional come in to do it, either for you or with you. We always try to save money. We always try to think about not just destroying something for the sake of replacing it completely with something else, but maybe looking at what you have to work with, and maybe modifying what you have to work with, I've come across this expression a couple times, but I think they call it grow where you're planted. Instead of just tearing up everything and wishing you had something else, you sort of just deal with what you got. And
right.
it doesn't have to be horribly expensive. So one of the first things I guess to point out, even before we talk about the individual pieces of the garden, like raised beds or other aspects of things, is walkways and fences, the pathways and the fences and the any walls that may be involved, especially in a neighborhood. That stuff is pretty much going to be permanent. I mean, you really don't want to have to move a fence or especially a brick wall or a pathway if you can help it. Of course, you can if you want, but and in some cases it may be an awful design, and you really, you know, the pathway may go through a spot that that is you know, bright and sunny that you really wish a bed was at, and that may be for reasons of maybe when the garden was designed many years ago, a tree may not have grown to the height it is now, and or a tree was there and it was cut, you know, it was died and was cut down or whatever. So there may be a good reason why that path is there, and is a great place to move it out of the way now, or possibly there's drainage problems or flooding or whatever. So other than that, though, you pretty much count on leaving your paths and your fenceways and walkways, whatever, right where they are. But you may want to deal with them in a better way. Like I have a particular entry to my house that has a little dip in it, and every time it rains really heavy, when we get our soakers with our, you know, 1-inch, 1 to 1.5 inch rains in an hour or whatever, sometimes you get those, it floods. So what I've done is I just bring in a little more gravel and just build it up a little more so that the drainage is there, the water goes underneath the path instead of over the top of it. And, you know, just laying a couple of buckets or a quarter yard of gravel or whatever over the top of something is not all that difficult, especially if you do it in stages, a couple wheelbarrows full, whatever. So your walkways need to be well drained, and if they're concrete or something like brick or whatever, especially as we get older, or even sort of busier, and we don't really pay attention when you're tired, whatever, you don't want a place where you're going to trip. You don't want one section of concrete to be raised up an inch over the one next to it. You don't want that little one brick that pops up when you step on it to trip you up. You don't want that section of brick to roll or, you know, make a dip or whatever. It has to be flattened out. So most usually brick walkways and gravel walkways are on a bed of some type. The brick especially is usually bedded in sand. So it doesn't really take that much to pull those bricks out, fix the bed, and level everything back out again. So that kind of thing is the first thing. Just get those paths level and free of, well-drained and free of soaking and drainage problems and whatever. And that kind of thing, especially if you're talking about as we do get on in time, people who have mobility issues, they might use wheelchairs. You definitely want those pathways clear, free and clear, and especially with wheelchairs, you may want spots where you can turn the chair around if the path is narrow. You may want to build a spot turnouts, almost, if you want to call them that, places where you can turn the wheelchair around and go in the other direction without having to maneuver off the path and possibly get stuck or get upset or whatever. So there's that kind of thing, and that's just the basic infrastructure. That also has to do with sunlight. I think I mentioned sunlight before, or wind direction. Mm-hmm. Are there neighbors? Do the neighbors congregate in a place? Maybe their barbecue grill is in a spot where, you know, you really don't want to have your activity right up next to where they are. I mean, you might want to move some of that away from a neighbor's area, or there may be a spot in a tall fence or a place that shrubbery is cleared out where you can actually see into the neighbor's yard. You maybe would not want to have some of your activities right at that spot. You might want to get away from that for a little privacy. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about, just sort of design evaluation and just sort of see where the sun is, see where the wind is coming from, see where the shadows fall at certain times of day. And obviously for your gardening, you want as much sun as you can get. And, I'm sort of sun challenged where I am, but, you know, get sun and, you know, good strong midday sun. But in the early morning, I wish it could be better. And in late afternoon, I know it could be better. So, you know, we do have that challenging issue of not getting full sun, so the produce isn't always as strong and healthy as it could be. So you always want a lot of sun. And if you do have some plan changes, you want to make a little map, make a little diagram of things, to scale, obviously, if you have a, you know, a 60 by 100-foot area you're working with or whatever it might be, you want to lay it out in a scale like 1 inch might equal 10 feet or something like that. And then you can draw in your beds and draw in your stuff. Garden, you know, real gardeners or serious gardeners are used to doing that anyway. So, you know, we've got that. That's just common, you know, common sense. But now I thought we'd get into some of the basic, you know, basic elements of gardening for convenience. And the key element is a raised bed garden. And, you know, this idea has been with us for a while. And I never really messed with it until about eight or 10 years ago, really. I mean, as far as my own place. And it really is a great, you know, a great thing to take some, you know, it might be bricks, it might be a concrete block, it could be timbers, it could be just a lot of different things, a lot of different items. And obviously, if it's wood, you want to try to work with a species of wood that's water resistant. You know, redwood's ideal in the western states. Some of the other woods like cedar would be ideal in the eastern part of the country. And there's other particularly regional woods that are, you know, pretty Osage, and some of the other just specific woods that are known to be rot resistant, maybe not be rot proof, but, you know, black locust and some of the other types of woods. Now, a lot of people may ask, while we're talking about this, why we're not just using treated wood. Well, treated wood and railroad ties have been treated with either creosote or some type of a fairly highly chemical compound that makes it great for resisting rot and water problems, but is not great for the soil. And so, and the same with treated lumber. You've got salt treated lumber, and you've got some other chemical composition, copper, arsenate, and some other stuff in these modern treated woods. And even though they have been more human friendly over the past 10 or 15 years, they've been working more towards less toxicity with the same amount of water resistance. If you're going to use something like that, I would suggest lining the inside of the bed before you put the soil in it with something that will separate the soil from the wood itself. In some cases, a pond lining, it's like a EPDM rubber, which you can get commercially. Not especially just simple black plastic or something, because that'll deteriorate over time. You want to get a heavier rubber roofing material or flashing, a good broad skin of roof aluminum roof flashing. That works real well because that will not deteriorate. It doesn't necessarily have to come up even where you can see it up over the edge, but just to separate the soil from the inside layer or inside surface of the wood if you're using wood that's been treated. So that's pretty important. There's a lot of other things. If you're using concrete, you really don't need to worry about that. If you're using bricks, obviously you don't have to worry about that. I don't know what else. Stone. I mean, stone is you know, a fine natural material. You're not going to have to worry too much about that. And if you use, if you use redwood or cedar or some of the other water-resistant woods, then you really don't have to worry about the soil touching it because it is not toxic to the soil or you. So there shouldn't be any issue. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of people using, a number of people use raised beds with railroad ties or raised beds with treated wood, and then they wonder why their tomato plants aren't doing well, especially alongside the edge. You know, that's they're just getting poisoned, and that's the same. You know, same in greenhouses. You see these sometimes homemade wooden greenhouses, beautiful timber frame type greenhouses, where the plants are just not really doing well, and comes to happen that the wood was treated with either a treatment or even linseed oil, commercial linseed oil has petroleum distillates in it. And when it's in the greenhouse, especially when it gets condensation, it drips right into the soil, and the soil takes it, and it just takes up all that petroleum distillate, and that's the problem. So, you know, you got to think about that stuff. You know, chemicals and pesticides and wood preservatives do not mix with vegetables very well. So we avoid getting them together. So we got a raised bed. Now some of the parameters here is it has to be well drained, and it has to be you know, of course you can build it any size you want, but what's important is that you want to build it so that you can reach into it you know, into it from all, either one side or both sides, fairly easily when you're either kneeling, sitting, or in a wheelchair. So they can't be too wide. Now the height can be anywhere from say about 18 inches where you can actually sit on the edge of the bed while working, and that's always real convenient. Or you can get up to 24 inches in height. 18 to 24 inches is good because you can still reach into it from that height from either a wheelchair or some kind of a stool from the outside, and you can still be seated while working. But if you get over 24 inches, you're going to find that difficult. So on height, you know, you get your pencils out, you write this down. Height can be anywhere from 18 to 24 inches, and the bed width is really sort of critical because you want to be able to reach into it. If you can only reach to it from one side, if you have, say, a fence on the other side or if it's built up against something and you can only reach into the bed from one side, you want to limit your width to about 30 inches. And that'll allow you to, you know, reach in and access everything from the edge without really having to stretch too much. If you can get to it from both sides, you can count on 60-inch width because that'll give you 30 from one and 30 from the other. And so the length of the bed then is pretty much anything you want to deal with. Now, if you have enough material, you could have a bed length of 12 feet or more, as long as you can get to it from one or both sides. The length isn't really that different. Now, what I do want to point out that if you are planning on a raised bed where you don't necessarily need to sit down. And this is something to think about because you may be 45 years old at this point in your life and you don't need to sit down. When you get to be 60, you may need to want to sit down. So you can build a bed 30 inches high so you can work at it standing up. However, you want to think about down the road, is that going to be really practical, 20 years down the road or whatever. So that's always something to think about. The other thing to think about is a 30-inch high bed is going to require more material, more expensive, obviously, and then you're also going to have more issues with soil weight and pressure. You know, water gets, especially in an open bed like that, water, when it gets wet, creates a hydrostatic pressure, water pressure. Water and soil get heavy, and they start to push out, and, you can actually have a situation where some of the soil at the bottom can really exert quite a bit of pressure when it gets wet. So when the wall is only 24 inches high, it's not as big a deal. When it gets up to 30 inches, you're really containing a lot of soil. And when that gets wet, you can have a blowout situation unless that bed is made of stone or brick or something like that, and can contain the pressure. So that's something to think about. And, I think mine probably are up at the level of about 18 inches or so, which is a real comfortable, sit on the edge kind of thing. You can step on the edge of a nice broad 8 or 10 inch surface to walk around the edge of it on top, and you can lay tools down there and set on it, like I said. So it's, that works out pretty well. I think mine and a lot of them I see are, in the length of nature of about 8 to 10 feet in length, and somewhere in the 4 feet in the 4 foot wide area, but you can get to it from both sides, so that's pretty convenient. Those are the parameters that I would pretty much think about. Now, of course, you do also think about the kind of things you're growing. If people have trees, for example, like small fruits and stuff, you can do that in a raised bed, but they have to be bigger. So you think about that. If you're really just growing some tomato plants or radishes or something like that, you may be able to get by with a much smaller bed. And some people enjoy putting up a number of small beds instead of two or three large beds. And that can be it can be a little more expensive to do a number of little ones, but not awful bad. And they can, they actually probably a little more flexibility with a number of smaller beds anyway. But no matter what you build, you're going to have to fill it with soil. So where you put them not only depends on your sunlight availability, but also access to soil. Don't necessarily have to be able to back a truck up right to it, but you have to be able to maneuver a wheelbarrow, and unless you're willing to carry the soil in bucket by bucket, which is can be a lot of work. Pretty much the way I do it is, you know, wheelbarrow at a time. The truck can get up close, but it's not right there. So you can transfer the, you know, get a either buying soil from the we have a local landscape, we have a couple of local landscapers that sell excellent organic soil from the you know, from the local area that set aside just for the people who want to feed their gardens. You know, a lot of it, you know, either cow or chicken manure based stuff with you know, just good well mixed stuff. For me, I just pull in dirt from one part of the yard and you know, clear the rocks, and then we mix in the chicken manure or the composted chicken manure that has newspaper litter and a little bit of wood chips and some green material and, you know, good carbon nitrogen mix, and it's well stirred stuff that has been working for a good year or so, and that's just great to mix in with that good rich soil, and it makes, you know, great garden beds. And if you don't want it, if you don't have access to that, if you're a suburban kind of situation, if you don't have a vehicle where you can go, you know, go out into the country and get a farmer's horse manure or cow manure or whatever, you can always buy this stuff, you know, pretty good black soil at those home and garden big box stores, or even at your local feed and seed. You know, some of the bigger ones always have a little little selection of that kind of stuff. As more and more suburbanites move out to the country, you know, you'll find the stores have sort of adjusted their inventory to match people for convenience. And, you know, if that's how you do it, that's at least that's a good way to start. As you have lived in the country for a while, you'll learn to find out who has manure, who has what kind of manure, and who might even be willing to deliver it for a little extra fee to your place and, you know, dump it somewhere where you can work with it. So that's sort of the way things, you know, things are around here, and I think it's probably a lot like that around in a lot of places. So, you know, pretty much building your soil is what you're doing as a gardener. First and foremost, you build the soil, then you worry about your plants, and that's you know, that's the right way to do it. So, I think we pretty much covered the covered that. One thing I do, I think I mentioned at the beginning, is saying we always try to look for lower cost ways to do things. That means recycling, repurposing, reusing things. You know, I just came across the city of our city here, which is, I don't know what it is, and in the summer, it's probably 40,000 people, something like that at the most, but maybe not even that high. It's probably 20-something thousand. But you know, in the winter, it's a tourist area too, so in the winter it shrinks a little bit. But they have knocked down portions of, I guess it was part of a building and here and there, so they've got piles of used brick. And, you know, maybe they have a purpose for it and maybe not, but it never hurts to ask, no matter if it's municipal stuff or a contractor or whoever it might be. If it's historic brick, somebody's probably already claimed it, but just brick walls and stuff, a lot of times people would be happy to have you cart it away just for the taking. And that's always good building materials. You can always build a little raised bed wall out of the brick. It doesn't have to look pretty. I mean, really, it's only a garden bed. It's not the municipal building. So you can think about that kind of stuff. Stones, wood and lumber. Sometimes that comes in, you know, really handy for things. Pipe and plumbing, stuff like that. I mean, I was looking at a really nice little use of building the corners in a raised bed where you're putting in two huge eye bolts into the ends of the wood where the corners meet, and then you're slipping a pipe through the eyes, because you put the eyes, you know, fairly close to each other or one above the other at the top and the bottom, or near the top and bottom, and you can slip that pipe right through, and that holds the corners together. And that's, you know, cheap and easy, and you can use reinforced construction bar. For you don't want to use a big broad pipe, you can always use a thinner rebar, and you know, real easy and inexpensive way to make a corner, as opposed to permanently nailing it or screwing it together, where it's going to be, you know, maybe a problem in keeping it together. Whereas a big strong eye bolt and a piece of pipe are going to pretty much stay there forever. So, you know, so the raised bed garden is probably your key element in a convenience type garden. You know, you build it to suit your height and your reach, and you build it well, and you've got, you know, got yourself a garden you can use over and over and over. But we also have container gardens, and that's another thing most people haven't really thought about. I mean, more and more every year, just in the magazine here, we get we get more and more submissions, it seems, on container gardening, and that's telling me that more and more people are coming from either gardening in places where they don't have a lot of room to garden, or they are coming from places where they really never have gardened, and they don't need to start out, start out in a big way. So containers are a really good solution for gardeners in a convenient sense, because you can pretty much put those buckets and tubs or whatever it is you're using any place you want, and then put the dirt in them and then see how it goes. If it doesn't work, it's not that much that difficult to scoop out the dirt, scoop it back out again, put it in a bucket till you can move the container, move it to where you want it again the second time, and then put the dirt back in it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a permanent location. And I myself, in the summer and spring and summer months, place container gardens in certain places, and then in the winter just empty everything out and put the containers away under the deck or something like that, and then put them back out again in the summer or the spring. The containers can be buckets, big buckets or plastic animal feed tubs. If you want to make them that big, they can be big pots. Just a lot of things that that can be used. So, the point is to keep them in places where you find it convenient to garden. It may be a deck, it may be mm-hmm. on top of a wall. It could be anywhere. The one thing to remember though with them is that they dry out a lot quicker than a regular bed would be. So you've got to remember they're not really connected to the soil or the earth. Because they're in containers, so you have to keep on thinking that you need a water source nearby or a hose to be able to to garden on a regular basis and keep those containers moist. So that's pretty important.
Yeah, there's I was going to mention that with the container gardening, where we had a neighbor that. They haven't had luck in the past with like a container tomatoes, but right next to their pool, I was there the other day visiting, and they've got probably about a 7 gallon, probably a five gallon bucket size, maybe a little bit wider container, and they got the tomato cage in the top of it, stuffed down in it, and it's a beautiful plant, and it's just loaded with tomatoes. So they said that this year they're having a lot of luck with that, and with container gardening, but we had in the subdivision we moved from last year, had and I don't know why they did this, but they had a pretty decent front yard, but it was just covered in, and I say covered, they probably had about 25 just pots out front. Instead of planting in the ground, they just had 25 pots sitting out there, and they would blow over. You could see when they obviously needed watering in the summertime and things like that. But container gardening definitely has its benefits and advantages, but a few disadvantages. I was going to ask you this too. I was on Craigslist this week, and I saw, and I wanted to ask your opinion on this, since it's kind of you would probably see it more than the average consumer. It was a powered wheelbarrow. And it was kind of like the old. It reminded me of kind of like the DR series of the brush cutters and the mowers and the sickle things and all that. But so it kind of looked that style. But it looked like a pretty big horsepower engine on it, and the handles to hold like a tiller. And then right in the front, it had a big bucket, and it was a dump bucket. And it looked in fabulous shape. I think memory serves, they wanted $750 for it, so quite expensive for a wheelbarrow. But I was thinking, for somebody that didn't have the energy or the strength, or for any reason, and our older seasoned citizens, that may be an option if you were still wanted to stay active and needed a wheelbarrow. But it's the first one I had seen in a long time, but it was a powered wheelbarrow for $750. And so my question for you was that with us seeing, and I don't have a TV, but when I do travel, with us seeing more TV commercials geared towards the baby boomers, and being the fact that we're going to have more people over 60 in America than any time before, apparently, starting now and over the next few years, we've seen more businesses focus on that age group. Have you started to see a lot of these farm and garden suppliers starting to come up with products and carry products designed specifically for that?
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's targeting what, you know, manufacturers or marketers will, they may not target it as their sole product, but they
right,
will have
right.
like, you know, different levels of, you know, it's all marketing and they know where their markets are. And, you know, they have their beginner levels, you know, the newbie gardeners, and you've got your, you know, your middle age where they try to sell the really expensive stuff, you know, the bigger compact tractors and all the bells and whistles kind of thing. You know, the ATVs with the gardening
attachments,
tubs on the back and attachments and stuff. And that's, you know, that may well be, you know, a good thing for a segment of the population. The wheelbarrows, and some, you know, a lot of those were designed for construction purposes, but I think they really just modified them for gardening purposes.
Yeah, I've been amazed at the cost of these, and our little homestead doesn't warrant one other than just for strictly leisure of touring around town, but the cost of some of these ATV-type vehicles, not just, you know, started way back in the 80s with the Honda three-wheeler with the big puffy tires on them, very cool. Then they deemed, you know, dangerous and death trap, so people, you know, and so they went to the four-wheeler, and then it's four-wheel drive now and reverse and automatic transmissions and things, and that kind of got us over to the jacked up mud grip tire golf carts, and then they kind of turned that into these true ATVs, two seats, two bucket seats with a gas engine, four wheel drive, roll cage, headlights, all this stuff. And I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, you know, my goodness, I'm trying to justify that. I know a lot of hunters use the four wheelers. We were walking into a Tractor Supply last week and. Hello? All righty, how about now? Do we have some sound? Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Okay, let's see what we got here in the, do a sound check. Okay, sound is back up. And, yes, we've got sound. Yippee! All righty. I was just yapping away. And then I saw something about sound on the chat room, and it looked like it went away there. So let me get back over here. Okay, there we go. Richard's call back in. Perfect. We had fixed the problem. Let's get back over here and see what we got going on. All right, Richard, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what that was all about.
I don't either. Yeah, just all of a sudden, I was talking away. I was talking about ATV vehicles, and I was talking about how they're $8,000 and probably limited use, and I was just yapping away talking, and I looked down at the chat room or switched over to the chat room from the switchboard, and then someone said something about sound, but I only saw one person say something about sound, and so I said, well, maybe they just need to refresh. And then I had ended my comment about ATVs. I had talked even about what we had GardenWise Living on just a week or two ago, and we were talking about gardening up. We using different types of trellis and things like that to garden up, which I'm sure. And I was like, so talking about trellis, how about it? And then all of a sudden, I was like, okay, Richard's gone. I checked the switchboard, and you had called back, obviously hung up to call back in, thinking it was on your end, and then I saw on the chat room that we had a sound problem. So I apologize about that. I was just yapping away and carrying on about the ATV vehicles you had mentioned about that. Now, it started with the old Honda three-wheeler way back in the 80s and the progression of those, and then all of a sudden I saw a sound issue, and I'm like, well, I've been sitting here talking to myself, which is known to happen on occasion. But not when I'm on air. So we fixed the problem. And I know we're over for your allotment, I guess, of time. I've got plenty of time, but it's based on your schedule. If you have any important issue that you didn't cover that you wanted to, or any other good tips for the folks, it's your call, because I know your time's valuable.
Well, yeah, just a couple more things I really
did
want to
share,
because it's just
super. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. The container gardening. As I said, we sort of have a water issue that they will dry out quicker. And some of the solution to that problem is you get yourself a cheap drip watering system, real convenient, the kind they use for, drip watering system or the subsurface, the kinds of the very small emitters, and you can just stick them. You run your hose and alongside each of the containers, and stick the place the emitters there. If you want to go to the expense, you can put it on a timer, or if you don't, you can just leave it on and operate it manually. But it's a real convenient way to get water to those containers without having to do it one by one. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to point out was that you can also place your containers on various levels. Like I don't do this, but I could. I have a deck, a really good south-facing deck area that's absolutely free and clear of anything else, and it wouldn't take a couple hours to throw together a little step stool, if you will, a step bench, I guess you say. So the one level of plants can be on the deck itself, one can be one step up and back a little bit, and the third could be up one step above that and back a little
right.
bit, and you have a pretty big gardening situation right there on your deck. I mean, deck's 16 feet square, and that's a pretty good amount of surface area there. So you can do that. The hose bib is right close to the deck, so I could have my emitters, my drip irrigation system right there. So that's people think they really don't have any room anywhere, whatever, and it doesn't take much to set up. Here and there, set up a couple of containers and get your watering taken care of with the modern technology. The other thing I wanted to mention
I've got to set something like that for my baskets. I've got a faucet just literally about 3 feet away from the corner of our front porch, and a big kind of like a wraparound type front porch. And I got a faucet 3 feet away that I always take over a pitcher and then fill up and then do. I got four baskets hanging on the front porch, and I had a friend up in Atlanta, a neighbor, who did this. I just have to turn that faucet on, and there's a drip system, and it just goes from each basket with the little rubber hose that you get an attachment for the faucet, and then you just put that rubber hose on it, and you just turn it on, and it waters all four baskets at the same time until it starts draining out the bottom, and then I've got to do that because they get pretty much morning, probably all the way up until noontime, maybe 1 o'clock sun, and even though we just bought some new baskets there because the pansies had spent out, some that said heat tolerant, or what did it say, Jen? Was it drought resistant or heat tolerant, and they were they're horrible. I have to end up watering them every day. If I don't hit them at least every day or every other day, I'll go out there and they'll just be just sitting there all limp and almost crispy if I don't have them at least every other day with water. So I'm disappointed in the false labeling of that. I thought, oh, this is perfect what we need, but I need to definitely get a drip system for those. I've been wanting to do that. I got to add it to my weekend list of things to do. Thanks for mentioning that.
yeah, that really does take a lot of labor and time out of your mm-hmm. schedule. You know, removes it and puts it, you know, in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, and it sort of has to do with containers, or it may or may not, but vertical gardening, and that's something that is relatively certainly not a new thing, but it's almost like a new idea that's been rediscovered, or an old idea that's been rediscovered. I've seen these in the home and garden stores or in the catalogs. You can buy wire framed or iron framed holders, or I don't know what you call them, just frames, I guess, that hold certain size containers that, you know, will bolt to the wall or bolt to a post or whatever, and they'll hold containers. Or you can just think about something as simple as a metal tomato cage. You know, you're basically asking the plant to grow vertically instead of horizontally. So this, you know, this can be a trellis, this can be a frame or a net, you know, a netting situation, or just a trellis with net in it, actually more of a formal wire and ring thing that would hold hold growth or containers. So if you can allow the plants to move upward, it makes them real easy to work on because you're not stooping to work on them. Mm-hmm. The lower ones will, but as you get up in height, and I would even include some of the plants like espaliards, you know, the kind of how they grow wine grapes, and
right.
They grow up for a point at which is, you know, waist level or chest level, and then they grow outward on cables, and you know, makes it just really easy to harvest. Finding plants that want to do that, like the beans and that kind of thing, we'll follow the wires, and we'll grow along with it. So that's a real good, you know, real good option there, and you can also, you know, you don't, that also is almost like a decorative thing. You can use it as a eyepiece in a smaller garden where you have little sections that are growing up higher where you can actually see them, and your cucumbers and your beans can be harvested right at that, you know, that level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I just wanted to throw that out there because we vertical gardening, you know, also extends to things like teepees and other structures,
right,
that can be made that sort of interesting, eye-catching appeal to people who want to do something a little different with their gardens and still have edible harvests to work with. But the last thing I wanted to just touch on before I get
sure.
off is the tools. You know, your tools are important too. Something with a softer handle or a larger handle sometimes is better as people get aged. I know from even my typing all my life, you know, with my hands. I mean, I've also worked, you know, machine tools and mechanics tools and all that, and it probably all has something to do with it. But, you know, sometimes in that cold, damp weather, arthritis starting to set in the knuckles and joints, and really, you know, it can hurt. Larger handle tools are always welcome as you get on. Gloves, you know, a good pair of gloves, ones that fit well, are really, really important, I think. I'm just in avoiding cuts and problems with your skin, but also in if they fit well and they're made of the right material, they will become second skin to you, and you'll feel just as comfortable working with them as without them for most things. So, it makes it real easy. So it's a good thing. The other thing is knee pads. You know, we see carpenters and floor installers and rug people, whatever, they all have knee pads on, tile layers. They all wear knee pads so they don't ruin their knees, you know, have knee problems by the time they're, you know, in their mid-40s. Same with the gardener. I mean, it's just the cushions or real contractors' knee pads, which really, I mean, I got a pair of excellent knee units for, it was probably less than $20, you know, good, strong plastic frames with these good hard rubber, or I don't know if they're rubber, but hard, soft cushions on them, and they feel great, and they don't slip. They, you know, they work real well. The other thing has to do with not just the tools, but the kind of things you work with in and around the garden. It may be like door handles and levers. And instead of round knobs, you may want to look at lever type, European type door and gate handles, which have, you know, a lever instead of a knob, because that way you can use the side of your arm or your knee or another part of your body. You don't need to grip and twist it. You can just push against it, and the door will, you know, door will open. Now, I would have a caveat for that if you have animals, larger dogs and animals that can actually jump up and do it with their own paws. You might want to think about that twice. But you know, in general, levers replacing knobs on gates and doors and things like that are even on faucet handles. You know, you can replace the round faucet handle with a lever, and you can turn the faucet on and off the hose bib and whatever on and off with relative ease, as opposed to having to grip it. If there's anything else that I can, you know, think here, it's just hoses. The use, you know, having some kind of a really good hose delivery system. If you have a coiled up hose instead of just throwing it on the ground and having it kink and you're tugging on it and all that stuff, going out and buying or even making out of a car wheel the rim or even a barrel, something you can wrap nice big loops of hose around and be able to feed it on and off of that with relative ease, instead of having to, you know, be frustrated with it, pulling on it and having kink and all that. That's always a good thing. So all this kind of thing adds up together and makes your gardening chores a lot easier when you have problems with access or joints or being able to get up and down, you know, easily. So I'm pretty much, you know, it may not be any one thing, but it's a combination of all these things, and it really does help.
We were out in the garden. I think we were picking snap beans. And I told Jen, I said, you know what? We need to invent kind of a low-riding, motorized little cart, maybe a little electric cart to save on gas and be a little bit more eco-friendly. I said, you know, we can where we can almost, we're just barely, because I know they have them where, like, you see them on the highway, they're putting the reflectors down. There's a guy in this little seat back there, or the, you know, and I know when you're planting acres and acres of pine trees, they have this little thing that pulls a guy that's sitting, you know, 3 inches off the ground and is doing that. I said, we need to have this little cart that we can sit in, almost like in a reclining position, where we can just, you know, a little button to push or a little lever, and just go to each plant. We're sitting there and pick our peas and then go a little bit further. So, you know, save our backs, save our tummies and everything else from having to bend down to pick those butter beans and those peas. I said, that's the utmost of laziness right there. But for somebody who can do that, but for everybody else, I thought, you know, maybe make it around, you know, $500 and then just have a little cart that you can go down your little 3 foot rows and head down there and we could market those and my goodness, you pick enough peas and you're thinking about things like that to save your back.
Well, I've seen in a catalog, and actually have seen one in person live, you know, it's a seat. It's like basically a small tractor seat mounted on two steel hoops, I guess, and there's but it's only wide enough to go down the rows. I mean, it's not a very broad thing. You just sit on it and go sideways, right and left. And, you know, it was not expensive. And the tires are nice, broad, you know.
They're like pneumatic tires. They have air in them and like a garden.
Yeah. And they really seem to work very well. And, you know, you can just go right and left on them. And, you know, it doesn't take, you're not really moving it all the time. So it's not like it has to roll steer or anything like that. You're just sort of going, you know, scooting over work and scoot over a little bit more and work. And that, you know, that's another aid that really I can see that's a very, very practical application.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about. The one I saw was completely green, has that kind of that metal green tractor-shaped seat on it. I'm familiar with it. I've seen it in some garden catalogs, possibly on gardening websites. So, yep, absolutely. Well, Richard, thank you very much for joining us today. Really cool topic that really affects everybody. Like you said, what is age? It's just a number, and which is really what it is. I know my dad at probably 80, 81 years old can probably outwork me. He's probably getting there to where it'd be close, but I know for many years he could definitely outwork me even up into his age. It's just something he had always done. So all these great tips from raised bed gardens to container gardening to different tools and things like that, it really makes you think, especially when you're getting out there thinking, oh, my back, or maybe even maybe it could be a great you know, they have this information because you're not gardening or you're not doing in your passion that you'd love to do, or I'd love to get out there, but it's just so stressing on the body. And so the show maybe have opened some eyes to some folks to some ideas where they can get back into their passion of gardening and backyard farming and things like that. So great information. We thank you very much for joining us. And I got your topics via email. We've got some great ones coming up, folks. So tune in the second and fourth Thursdays of every single month for Richard Frubenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Richard, tell us very quick before you go, if you would, how they can subscribe to your awesome publication, Back Home Magazine.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. 1-year subscription to 6 issues is $21.97, and you can either call us on our toll-free number. It's 800-992-2546, or you can go to our website. It's www.backhomemagazine.com, just all in one string. And you can order online securely, and we have books, back issues, subscriptions, products, and there's all sorts of stuff. And I actually get to talk to a real live human being. And you know, that's the way we like it. You can, you know, our toll-free line is open. Our office hours are 9:30 to 5 every weekday, and after hours we just have a answering device that will take the order, and we can either call you back or you can leave the information on that securely. So that's about it. And I will see you, you on the radio, 2 weeks from now then.
Let me look at my calendar real quick, because we may not actually be meeting that week. We've got the next week is the 20th. Let's see what we have. Hang on, let me go back to it. We've got right now it's June 28th, so we're coming up on it'd be July 12th, right? Would be the next
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
The next two, actually, to be honest with you, the 26th is fine. The 12th is questionable. I will email you and let you know. I will be on the road the 12th, and I don't know if I'll be on the road or doing an event that day for that whole week that we'll be on the road. We'll be on the road 2 weeks, first week business, second week pleasure. And so I will email you and let you know several days in advance about the 12th. The 26th looks great, but the 12th is questionable. So I'll let you know off the air. I'll send you an email about that day.
Okay, well, that's fine. I'll keep my eye out, and we'll just move the topics as we need to. And
yep, absolutely.
We'll talk to you again whenever we meet.
Sounds great. Thank you very, very much for joining us, Richard. Richard Frubenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. I subscribe. It's great. I'm always thrilled when I see it in the P.O. box when I go collect the mail, because I'm like, what can I learn now? Especially living on a homestead, there's always something in his magazine that I can learn from and utilize here on the homestead. Whether you have a quarter acre or 4,000 acres, there's something in the publication that you can learn from. BackHomeMagazine.com. You love his show. It's one of my favorites all month. I so look forward to the show on the second and fourth Thursday of every single month. Richard Frubenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. So hope you enjoyed the show as well. And it looks like it's about time to wrap it up. And we thank you very much for tuning in today. Sorry about that little 4 or 5 minute technical glitch where we just completely went and had dead air. I was just yapping along, talking about the topic and asking questions, and all of a sudden I see there's no sound, so I apologize about that. technical problems will happen as long as you're broadcasting live on air. So thank you very much. And a big hug and a big sloppy kiss and a big thank you to all of the Chicken Whisperer fans who had opened their hearts and opened your wallets and made this dream come true for Melody and Keith Meyer. We raised $1,000 in just 7 days. In 1 week, we started last Thursday on this radio show, and we're ending it this Thursday on the radio show. And in 1 week, 7 days, we raised $1,000. How cool is that? I'm just tickled and very proud and humbled that the Chicken Whisperer fans came through and raised that money so Keith can take a lifelong dream trout fishing trip and have some good quality time with his wife and focus on their life and focus on the past and have a really good time, clear their minds, step away from the hospitals and the doctors for about a week and just really relax. I think that's good medicine as well. And so I will be calling them later today and talking with them. I'll also be calling the resort, talking with them. And so thank you for that. Don't forget, tonight is the last night. Today's the last day. Tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the last time you'll be able to enter the June Chicken Coop Contest, brought to you by MyPetChicken.com. That is tonight at 11:59, your last chance to actually to enter. Just go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer, and when you get to our Facebook page, you'll see under our big photo a button to push that says Coop Contest. You really can't miss it, and then that'll tell you how to enter the contest. We've had well over 1,000 entries for this, but don't let that discourage you, because if you don't enter, you can't win. And it will be truly by random drawing, and we'll be doing that tonight. Or maybe first thing in the morning. I don't know if I'll be up at midnight to, but maybe first thing in the morning, we'll do random drawing and pick the winner. And we'll be announcing the winner here on the radio show tomorrow. And then after the radio show, we'll be posting it on our Facebook page. So let's see. We thank you very much for tuning in today. We're going to leave you with just a few sponsor commercials as we end the show. We do hope you will support our sponsors. In fact, there's actually only two more days to use the coupon code JUNEWHISPER. Just two more days to use the coupon code JUNEWHISPER at eggcartons.com. You'll get $10 off a $50 order. That's 20% off, folks. A $10 off your $50 order at eggcartons.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your HenSaver aprons today at HenSaver.com. That's HenSaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com, that's MTHealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Alrighty, folks, thank you so much for tuning in today. We hope you have a wonderful and blessed afternoon. Tomorrow is Fun Friday. We'll be here right here, broadcasting live, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll have and be announcing the winner of the awesome chicken coop contest brought to you by MyPetChicken.com. And we'll have a few other prizes to give away to our listeners as well. So we'll see you tomorrow. Hey, we've just about made it through a week together. Tune in tomorrow, Fun Friday, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day, everybody. Love you all.